From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca Foster. It's been ages since we heard from Rebecca. Good afternoon. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show. A gloomy afternoon in the northwest of the UK. But I'm in good form. I hope you are too. The last live show of the week. It's a good one. I've got two very interesting guests lined up for you today.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
And they caught Ghislaine, eh?
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, this hour, Mark Collett returns to the program. It's been a long time since Mark was on. He is a conservative commentator, an author, and broadcaster. Check him out at thefallofwesternman.com. Mark is back on the program. And Posy Parker joins the program as well, a very prominent feminist campaigner. She's been called one of the UK's most prominent gender critical feminists. We're going to talk with her because she's come in for some serious, what I would say very, very serious attacks personally, very recently, including threats on her property and her person and people putting her details, her address online. We'll catch up with Posy Parker again. Theposyparker.com is the website. She'll join us in the second hour. So lots to get into on Thursday's programme. It's July 2nd, approaching, well, for my American listeners, approaching, of course, Independence Day on Saturday, Independence Day weekend. But it'll look very different, of course. We've been hearing nothing but, I won't say nothing but the BBC and Sky today spending a bit of time talking about the beaches on the UK's east and west coasts and what it's going to be like on Saturday. We might get into some of that during the programme. You can tweet me as usual through the usual Twitter thing. You can do that if you want. So you heard Rebecca Foster there on the news saying that the FBI has arrested Ghislaine Maxwell in New Hampshire, apparently. We began hearing about this around about 2:15 p.m. 2:30 p.m. in the UK today. And I know many of my listeners are following the Jeffrey Epstein story and the accusations made by Virginia Roberts Giuffre and others. Of course, you will have seen, or you might have seen, the recent Netflix documentary. Here's Sky News' Jane Secker breaking the story this afternoon. It's a big deal, this.
This is Sky News Today. It's 4 o'clock. These are the headlines. The FBI arrests the British socialite Ghislaine Maxwell over the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. Social distancing is to end in the classroom in England to ensure all students return in September.
And we'll come back to the social distancing for children in a few minutes. So, Ghislaine Maxwell. Here's Greg Milam. He's Sky News reporter in Los Angeles. Greg Milam, bringing you up to speed on what's going on.
Yeah, she was arrested, as you say, this morning, 8:30 in the morning in New Hampshire, and has been extremely elusive since Jeffrey Epstein's death last summer in a prison cell awaiting that trial. We're expecting more information from the FBI in the next hour about the charges she faces. Until now, she has never been charged and has always denied any wrongdoing, of course, but this is what the FBI is saying. She's been accused of the sexual exploitation and abuse of multiple underage girls. They allege she assisted, facilitated, contributed to Jeffrey Epstein's abuse of minor girls by, among other things, helping Epstein to recruit, groom and ultimately abuse girls under the age of 18. Some of the counts that she faces, including conspiracy to entice minors to travel to engage in illegal sex, conspiracy to transport minors, criminal sexual activity. As I say, there will be more detail in the next hour from the prosecutors in New York, but the numerous accusers of Jeffrey Epstein had said for a long time that Ghislaine Maxwell had been involved in the recruitment of them to Jeffrey Epstein's employment, to provide massages and then to provide sexual favours as well. One of the lawsuits against him, and there are many, say that she was the highest ranking employee who oversaw the training, recruiting and the concealment of his activities. And when Jeffrey Epstein died in that prison cell, the prosecutor said at the time they would continue their investigation into those who were around him, those in his circle, to see if there were co-conspirators involved in that. And of course, one of the central allegations against Ghislaine Maxwell during all of this has been from a woman called Virginia Roberts Dufresne, who alleges that it was Ghislaine Maxwell who introduced her to Prince Andrew during that time, and alleges she was forced to have underage sex with Prince Andrew, something Prince Andrew has denied. But all the time Ghislaine Maxwell has been in hiding and avoiding the authorities, all of this has not been able to be examined. It will now. We expect she will be in court later today.
Yeah, and I think round about now, there is a press conference that might be happening round about now. That's 5 o'clock UK time. If anything comes out of that, I'll bring it to you a bit later on. I imagined a certain phone call this morning. Can you imagine it? Hillary, it's Bill. They got Ghislaine. Pick up a couple of lobsters and a bottle of Chablis on your way back. I would imagine the likes of Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump and others, I would imagine they're not exactly quaking in their boots. I don't imagine anybody is. Who knows what's going on here? Can you imagine the warden, though, of the federal holding facility that will house Ghislaine? Hey, in light of what happened to Jeffrey Epstein? Now, lads, check them feckin' cameras. Especially the ones outside her cell, lads. Now, lads, no care packages from anyone, especially the Clintons. And plenty of strong coffee on every shift. And make sure nobody falls asleep. So the memes are flying around. And of course, I indulged myself with one or two memes as well. Will Ghislaine Maxwell ever go to trial? Why not? Her going to trial doesn't mean that she's going to name names. Ghislaine Maxwell could go to trial and say nothing. She could deny having anything to do with the trafficking of girls for Epstein, flatly deny it, refuse to take the stand, which is her right, say absolutely nothing. She might then be found guilty and given a sentence. But whether or not she ever served that sentence, well, you're basically taking somebody else's word for that. We sentence Maxwell to 17 and a half years in a federal holding facility or a federal penitentiary, and you have to take their word that she's actually going to be there. So look, I wouldn't get too excited about it. Will she make trial? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not making any bets. When Epstein was put in that holding facility in New York, I joked on the day that he'd be found hung in his cell, and a lot of people laughed at that later on. You know, I don't know. Who knows? Who knows, maybe in a few days' time you'll be getting a report from Sky News, maybe, you know, saying that the socialite Ghislaine Maxwell has been found dead in her cell. You might get that report. It might go something like that, you know. The socialite, it's 11 o'clock. The socialite Ghislaine Maxwell has been found dead in her cell. Ms. Maxwell was being held in New Hampshire. Ahead of standing trial on child trafficking charges, Maxwell was found face down in her cell toilet with her hands tied behind her back and her legs pointing towards the ceiling. In an obvious case of suicide. Right? Could be in a few days or in a week or 2 weeks. Something happens to her. I don't know. We'll wait and see. It's 11 and a half minutes past the hour. Virtue signalling and celebrities. Mad stuff going on. Michael Palin is somebody you would have imagined. You would have banked on. Being somebody who had a sense of humour, number one, you would have banked on him not getting involved in the levels of virtue signalling around race and race baiting that we have seen since the unfortunate George Floyd died in that terrible video that we all saw. But no, Michael Palin has added his weight to calls to change the medal that one would get when one gets knighted by the crown, by the queen. The medal you get as it stands carries the image of Saint Michael stepping on Satan's neck. But apparently that's a bit close to the bone, that, George Floyd, and there are calls for the medal to be changed. And Michael Palin, strangely enough, has added his, as I said, his weight to that campaign. Nicola Sturgeon, Jimmy Sturgeon, Scottish First Minister, dreadful to look at, dreadful to listen to, that's real misogyny, has announced that the use of face coverings will become mandatory in shops in Scotland from July 9th as Scotland eases coronavirus restrictions. Just in case you're confused, the UK's devolved parliaments, Northern Ireland, Wales and Scotland, have each basically, each devolved parliament has been deciding on the coronavirus measures. They have implemented their own unique coronavirus measures, right? England, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales. So Scotland says we'll open more shops and ease more restrictions, but you've got to wear masks in shops. Nicola Sturgeon. She also spoke about children and said that children under 11 can play from now on, can play without physically distancing themselves. Jimmy Cranky. Where is she? Where is the little troll? Belongs on the end of a pencil. Here she is, Jimmy Cranky.
For children who are 11 years old or under, we are removing the requirement for you to physically distance with other people when you're outdoors. That will allow you to play more normally with your friends, which I hope you will enjoy. I'm sure this move will also be appreciated by your parents and carers.
Now, if you're under 11, you don't have to physically distance. You can get down and dirty with your friends rolling around the mud, playing football and whatever else you play when you're under 11. I can't remember. It's been a long time ago. Kiss chase was a big deal when I was 11, 12, 13. I bet you kiss chase now might see a child prosecuted for sexual harassment. I'm not joking. Was there a story that came out of New York or Florida a couple of years back where a young boy was sent home and another boy was arrested for kissing a girl? We're talking about 6-year-old children now. Kiss chase was a big deal. Oh, the girls ran from me, I tell you. Right, so she said children under 11 don't have to physically distance. She went on, and it gets incredibly complicated thereafter. Nicola Sturgeon.
Our guidance is different for young people aged 12 to 17.
12 to 17, now it's different.
We're not yet relaxing the physical distancing rule for you, and I'll say more about that shortly. But we know that you don't want to be limited by who your parents can meet. You want to have your own lives and meet your own friends. So when you meet other people, we are still asking you to do that outdoors, and you should still stick to a limit of 8 people from no more than 3 households at any one time. However, we will lift the limit on the number of those meetings you can have in any one day. That means you can meet different groups of friends at different times of the day. And it also, importantly, means that you won't be prevented from meeting your friends just because your parents or carers or your brother or sister happens to be meeting their friends.
Does anybody fucking understand any of that? Children aged between 12 and 17, you can see 3 friends between breakfast and brunch, but only 1 friend after lunch. Those friends must be from different households, and those households must be in different postcodes, except on Sundays. How the fuck did we get to the stage in human evolution that we listen to trollops like Nicola Sturgeon telling us you can do this and you can do that, and you can't do this and you can do that, and it's all the rest of it, and you can do that, and you under 11. Who the fuck do these people think they are? It's insane. How have we been reduced to listening to a rotten ginger troll like Nicola Sturgeon? Eh? Somebody who screams for Scottish independence, yet swears allegiance to the Queen and all her heirs. Because if she didn't, she wouldn't be standing there telling your children where they can go on Wednesdays and where they can't go on Thursdays. Huh? Mental. 17 minutes past the hour. Crazy stuff. Lot of tweets on Ghislaine Maxwell. Lot of theories flying around about Maxwell and her arrest by the FBI today, this morning, in New Hampshire. Let's move on. Social crediting, right? It comes up, and it has been coming up on the programme for quite some time. The notion that, like your financial credit score. How did we ever allow them away with that, by the way? Credit scores. To assign every human being in the world a credit score. To give them basically a financial value. How did we let them away with that? What were we doing when this shit was being introduced to our lives? So you've got a credit score, and you'll know this if you ever go and apply for a loan, or if you go to an electronics shop and you can't afford the big screen television, but you want to buy it on a 2-year higher purchase, they'll check your credit score. Social credit score is coming in. It is. It isn't a conspiracy theory. It is coming in. Where you will be evaluated and given a score based on how much of a good citizen you are. This is true. And we're seeing evidence of this new system emerging all the time. Apparently, this year is the 50th anniversary of Pride. I didn't know that. I didn't know that gay pride parades and the gay pride movement began in 1970. I can do my mathematics, but it did apparently. And there was quite a bit of talk about this on breakfast radio this morning. And Gareth Thomas is a Welsh retired rugby player. And from what I saw of him, he was a pretty good rugby union player. I wouldn't be an expert now in rugby union, right? But anyway, right. And he was talking on Radio 5 Live this morning. And he was saying something that is very familiar. Something we've heard people say when talking about racism. He was saying that gays need allies. Straight people. And it is no longer good enough to not be homophobic. You need to be seen to be standing up for gays and the lesbians and the men who think they are women and the women who think they are men. And the people who dress in puppy dog costumes and stuff like that. It's not good enough to not care and to not hold any prejudice or ill feeling. You've got to be doing more than that. This is dangerous and it is an idea, as I've said before, whose time or its time has come. Here's Gareth Thomas on BBC Radio 5 Live this morning.
So I feel that for an ally, if they ask the right questions and their heart is constantly in the right place and standing up for people that they want to represent, then that to me is what an ally is. An ally isn't somebody who will say to you, I got no problem with gay people. That's okay, but show me you got no problem with gay people.
But by doing what? Sucking your cock, Gareth? How do I show you that I've got no problem with gay people? If I have no problem with gay people, and I don't bother gay people, and I don't give a shit really who you go to bed with, that's not good enough. I've got to show you, do I? How do I go about that?
Stand up for the people who haven't got the bravery or don't have the ability to stand up because they feel like they're going to be in the minority. Make that minority.
But gays are a minority. Thank fuck for that. They are a minority. And there's nothing wrong with being a minority. Right? What do you mean by thank fuck for that? You know exactly what I mean. I'm just stirring the shit a bit. Isn't this dangerous, this, isn't it? Isn't it not good enough to not be homophobic? My great friend and mentor, Billy McCarthy, rest in peace, he would be getting sick listening to this bullshit. You know? It gets worse, though.
A majority, a vocal majority, by being vocal, by standing up.
And I won't.
And being supportive, not just saying nothing.
Not just saying nothing, this is important.
And you think by saying nothing means you're not abusing anything, anybody, so you're not being discriminative in any
way. I'm not saying anything, so by not saying anything, I am not being discriminatory. But that's wrong, he says.
In any way. Sometimes silence and saying nothing is the deafening form of discrimination.
Silence and saying nothing is a deafening form of discrimination. I'm in the final now. Silence and saying nothing is a deafening form of discrimination. And this is what social crediting will be. This is what our children will inherit. They will have to. They will have to demonstrate for the purpose of their good citizen score that they don't have any problem with something that they actually don't have any problem with. But that's not good enough. You're going to have to be seen to be doing something. Ah, yes! This is Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show. It is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. The BBG, not the BBC. Good to be with you on Thursday, July 2nd, 2020. We're off to speak with Mark Collett. He joins me in a couple of minutes' time. After we hear this classic track from 1988, it's Fleetwood Mac and Everywhere. Right, that is Fleetwood Mac on the Richie Allen Radio Show Thursday. I'm really looking forward to catching up with Mark Collett. It's been quite a while since he was on the programme. I know that many of you will know who he is because he's got an enormous following on social media, but also the podcast, the broadcasting that he's involved in weekly. We will put links out to where you can find that. He is a conservative commentator, I think it's fair to say, an author, and I've just mentioned he's a broadcaster. Do go to the Fall of Westernman.com. These are strange times. Let's welcome back to the programme Mark Collett. Hey Mark, welcome back. How are you doing?
Thank you. It's great to be back, and it's always nice to be invited on the show. It's been a long time.
Too long, yeah.
It has. I'm always ready and willing to hop on, but I'm certainly not a conservative. I'd prefer to be described as a nationalist. I think conservatives are rather spineless, and the current conservative plan to let the entirety of Hong Kong flood into Britain is something I certainly do not support.
Oh yeah, of course I was going to bring that up. I talked about this yesterday, the economic catastrophe that we are bearing witness to now, which will get obviously infinitely worse as time goes on, will be exacerbated, of course, by saying to, I don't know, 3 million people possibly. Yeah, you can. We will talk about that coming in from Hong Kong. First question, we're going to go to the top of the hour. Lots of interest in you being on, which is brilliant. There are people saying to me, they're saying, Richie, you with your lefty ideas and your friends with their right-wing ideas and your identity politics, while you were arguing about gender and race and racism and all of that for the last few years, the powers that be, the elites, whatever we want to call them, they've been putting together this plan to basically transform human existence as we know it, turn the country into a police surveillance state, introduce mandatory vaccinations and all the terrible things that we see happening since this crazy lockdown. And you're to blame, Richie, I've been told. And the people on the other side of the divide, the nationalists, are to blame because we've been so wrapped up in all of that, divide and conquer, we haven't been alive to what the elites are doing. Now, I've given my answer to that. What's yours?
Well, anyone that's saying that is either rather simple or willfully ignoring the kind of content that I've been putting out. Thankfully, my YouTube channel is holding on to its position on YouTube by the tips of its fingernails. But you only have to look at the content I produce to see that I don't just talk about race, but talk about a huge number of different topics. And those topics include civil liberties, censorship. I've talked numerous times about censorship. I've done entire hour-long streams on the coronavirus. I talk about real-world activity. I talk about the fact that this virus has been used by the government here in the UK very, very unfairly to institute a lockdown which has no basis in science or no basis in decent, in common decency. So I've talked about all of these things. Yes, I talk about race, I talk about mass immigration, but I talk about many, many other things as well.
You do, and I wasn't referring to you. You do. I've said this before. You talk about many of the things that get discussed here. I wasn't referring to you specifically. But in general, the independent media has been accused in general of obsessing with race and not really talking about class. And while all of that's going on, this tyranny is unfolding, which I think, Mark, is here to stay, to be honest. I don't see it going anywhere, these new normals.
No, it is. It does look like it's here to stay. And I've also said in my coverage of the coronavirus that the mainstream media and the big social networking companies like YouTube and Facebook and Twitter have all been absolutely complicit in pushing absolute lies and fear about the coronavirus. And recent figures have shown, and I was saying this on my show for a long time when it came to the coronavirus, I said, if everything they are saying is true, between 2.4 and 4 million people will die in the UK. Now, around 43,000 people have died in the UK, which would put coronavirus in the same bracket as a bad flu season. Yeah. Now, I actually know people who have died of coronavirus, so I'm not saying it's made up, I'm not saying it's not real, and I know people who work in hospitals, and the people I know who've worked in hospitals have said, yep, it's real, but it's nothing worse than a bad case of the flu, and the statistics show that if you are under the age of 60 and don't have underlying health conditions, you are about as much, you're about as likely to die of coronavirus as you are in a road traffic accident. And that tells you everything you need to know about the lockdown and the fact the lockdown is absolutely unnecessary and it is being used, or the coronavirus is being used, as a massive power grab to take away our civil liberties and potentially to destroy small and medium-sized businesses, which will be replaced by huge corporate entities, which will take up just more of the economic space.
No doubt about it. I echo everything you said there. Presumably, maybe I shouldn't presume, those people you know of who have died, presumably then they were a bit older and they did have significant chronic illness, Mark, did they?
The people I know who have died of coronavirus, I know one person who's part of the nationalist movement. His name was Simon Harris. He ran the channel European Freedom. He lived in Barcelona, and sadly, he died of coronavirus. He was over the age of 60. I don't know about his health conditions. And other people that I know through friends who have died of it are also all over the age of 60. I don't know of anybody under the age of 60, personally, who has died of coronavirus.
And today, there extraordinary things are being broadcast today on Sky and the BBC. They're talking about certain towns where they have evaluated that 20 people in 100,000 have symptoms, meaning that we're getting close to where we need to have localised lockdowns. I believe this to be tyranny, Mark. I believe it to be tyranny.
Oh, it's absolute tyranny, and it's based on a lie. If you look at the information, the data, I believe it was coming out of Iceland. Iceland was saying that they had the largest testing sample in the world. When I reported on it, that was the case. I don't know if that's changed now. But they were reporting that 50% of people who were infected with coronavirus had no symptoms at all. Yet in Britain, the government purposely made sure that the only people who were tested were people who had chronic cases, which made the death toll look much worse as a percentage. So they were testing people who had chronic cases. So when people died, it made it look as if the mortality rate was sky high, something like 8 to 10%. And when you've got an 8 to 10% mortality rate, people are thinking, oh, my gosh, this is really bad. You know, if I get this, I've got a 1 in 10 chance of dying. Now, no one would take that gamble with their life. But when you actually look at the mortality rate in places where there's more widespread testing and you take into account 50% of people don't even get symptoms, all of a sudden, the mortality rate drops, especially for people under the age of 60 with no underlying health conditions, to such a negligible rate that, as I said, you're as likely to die in a road traffic accident as you are of this disease.
So what's happening and why? I believe that those making the decisions know that it has a very low mortality rate. They know that the books are being cooked and that 43,000 is probably in reality a lot less. So why? This is the $64,000 question. Why are they doing it then?
Well, I think it's just a matter of power. I think it's a matter of bringing in a surveillance state. Now, I every year arrange a camp for people who are involved with my organisation. And why am I telling you about that? I'm not plugging the event.
You can if you want, Mark. Go ahead. I don't mind.
No. I don't want to plug the event. I'm telling you about it because I have to deal with campsites, which has given me an insight into the government's latest tyranny, which is called track and trace. So if you go to a campsite, you cannot go unless you are a group of less than six, and those six people cannot come from more than two different households. But when you are at the campsite, every person who camps, and this will be the same for hotels and B&Bs, has to give over their passport or their driving license. And they have to be entered into a database called the Track and Trace database. And this will mean that the government knows exactly where you have been, where you have logged into, where you have stayed, who you've been staying with, who you might have come into contact with. And this will give the government unprecedented power to, as the scheme is called, track and trace every single person who lives in the UK. And take into account the fact they're already saying, we want to get rid of cash, everyone's got to pay by card. This will give the Conservative government and any subsequent governments who don't repeal these laws unprecedented insight into where we go, who we mix with, what we do. It's absolutely horrible. In fact, it's the kind of situation you could make into or would have made in the past into the subject of a fantastic dystopian thriller or horror.
Yeah. And as a nationalist, as you call yourself, as a proud Englishman, will you be heading down to your local pub on Saturday where you'll be asked to give your details before you're seated and served by people wearing visors and told not to shout and keep your voice down and keep your back to the people at the next table? Will you be rushing to the pub on Saturday for a pint?
I've been doing as I please anyway. I haven't let this affect me. And if I want to do something, I'll do it. I'm not going to be told what I can and can't do. The fact of the matter is...
Yeah, but the pubs have been closed, right? We like a drink. Oh, I know you like a drink. So in terms of going to the pub...
I don't really drink.
Oh, don't you? Ah, fair enough.
No,
okay.
If I did, I'd be doing that. But I can tell you this now. What they've done is absolutely scandalous. And it breaks down communities. I talk a lot about community. And what they've done has shattered communities. It has stopped people meeting. It stopped families meeting. And I think this is, and I talk about this a lot, I've talked about this on the show, their aim is to atomize and isolate people as individuals. And this does exactly that. And it does it under this guise of fear. Now, interestingly, they have said that the reason we're not allowed to meet and the reason we can't go out and see our friends and family is because if we catch it, it will put a huge burden on the NHS. And we've all got to pray to the cult of the NHS every Thursday night on our doorsteps and all of that other stuff, which can be seen as quite sinister when you look at it in that light. But interestingly, people are allowed to eat whatever they want. Well, 550,000 people every year die of obesity-related illnesses. That's more than 10 times the number of people who've died of coronavirus. If we're talking about protecting the NHS, why isn't the government making more efforts to stop the obesity epidemic? Why is it all about coronavirus, which compared to obesity kills only a tiny number of people?
A fraction. Dr. Vernon Coleman said to me the other evening, 1 billion people a year get the flu. And, you know, many of them obviously will have the flu, but it won't be very bad. And others will get it and it'll be pretty miserable. 10 million global cases of coronavirus, a drop in the ocean compared to flu. And yet here we are. Mark Collett is our guest. It's 21 minutes to the top of the hour. TheFallOfWesternMan.com. Find Mark's radio show. He's broadcast, he's podcast on YouTube. It's on BitChute as well. I'll put out links to it for those of you who haven't come across it before. Let's talk about the recent Black Lives Matter movement. I was fascinated watching the very quick, the speed at which we saw protests here in the UK against something that happened in the United States. And it did occur to me, of course, what you might be thinking about it, what other nationalists in this country might make of it. So what have you made of it? It seems to have died down now in the last few days or the last week or so. Well, what did you make of all of that when it happened?
Well, it's not about equality. This isn't about somebody who died in America. And we can talk all day about the death of George Floyd and what an interesting character he was and how he certainly shouldn't be put on a pedestal. And for leftists to be supporting George Floyd really tells you what their agenda is, because this man by anyone's measure, especially by the measure of leftists, was somebody who was a very, very nasty piece of work.
Yeah, but he served his time and he found God, and apparently he was doing a lot of nice things in his community.
Well, like taking methamphetamine and fentanyl and committing criminal acts. You've got to remember that if in today's world, if you walk down the street and you wolf whistled at a woman, you would be held up as worse than Lucifer himself. And George Floyd broke into a pregnant woman's house and held a loaded gun to her stomach, threatening not only her but her unborn child. And now he's the hero of the left. And he's the hero of the left because the left will use anyone they can to hold up as a cause so that they can rally people to come together to destroy Western civilization. And Black Lives Matter is an attack on Western civilization. They want to destroy our history, our culture, and most of all, they want to turn white people here in countries like this, where we are the indigenous people, into second-class citizens. And the agenda that they are pushing, if you reversed the terminology, if you reversed what they said, if you swapped black and white around in their propaganda, that propaganda would be labelled as racist and would be attacked by the media, by celebrities, by influencers, the very people who are now supporting Black Lives Matter.
I don't know about that. I've been covering race politics, racial politics for years on my programmes, always with an open mind. There's an enormous amount of evidence. Listen, forget what George Floyd might have done and whether he was a nice guy or not. He suffered a terrible death. And while white people in the United States, in terms of the actual figures, white people would have a violent encounter more often with the police, the fact is disproportionately blacks are battered by police officers. He suffered a pretty bad death. And I know people over here who've been in civil rights movements going back years now. I'm talking about black people, people I've known for years. I could name them. People like Lee Jasper and people like that. And they would say, look, what happened there was we see that happening over there and it brings up for us Stephen Lawrence and many other examples of black people dying mysteriously in police custody here in the UK and we don't like it. So what I'm going to suggest, and that's why we protested, what I'm going to suggest, Mark, is this is what how I see it. I see a genuine grassroots movement by people who don't want to destroy Western civilization, but people want equality in terms of policing equality and employment equality. And I see that grassroots movement being taken over by something more sinister. So I see where you're coming from. But I think what gets lost in all of it is that there is a problem with the way minorities are treated, particularly by the police. And there's a lot of evidence to support that in this country. But
I disagree. I completely disagree. If you want to talk about the police and inequality, the greatest case of racist inequality this country's ever known has been the police covering up the grooming of, last year alone, nearly 19,000 white girls who have been groomed, sexually abused, raped, trafficked, and in some cases murdered by men who are overwhelmingly of ethnic minority descent. And this is covered up. Hundreds of thousands of girls over decades have met a horrible fate at the hands of these men, and the police have at best turned a blind eye and at worst actively covered it up. Yet you don't see white people marauding down the street attacking ethnic minorities over this. And if you did, if you saw white people going to London or any city centre and getting very, very angry over these issues, they would be labelled racist. No one would be supporting them. The Premier League wouldn't be taking a knee for all the girls that have been abused. Yet this is a massive cover-up, and the cover-up's so big that the Conservatives are still covering it up.
You won't get an argument from me now. Let me interject you. I've done as much as anybody using this platform to talk about that. Interviewing people involved, interviewing victims, Maggie Oliver, the MP. I agree with you. And I would go further than you. It was definitely covered up. And it was covered up from the Home Office down. And there is a huge problem with the attitudes in certain Pakistani, in certain Pakistani communities, attitudes of young men towards white girls, undoubtedly, 100%. But I would say to you that you're engaging in classic whataboutery. That's got nothing to do with black people facing institutional racism in policing in this country. Institutional racism, which I've seen a lot of examples of over the years. I would say it's got nothing to do with what's happening in Pakistani communities. I don't know why you'd bring that
up. Of course it has, because we're talking about institutional racism in the police. And the biggest, I'm saying, the biggest issue of institutional racism in the police is how white girls are ignored by the police when they attempt to report cases of grooming, sexual abuse and rape. And we are talking here about a violent criminal in America who died when he was being arrested. Now, I've looked at the police report, I've looked at the coroner's report, and it's very important to state that at the time of us discussing this, the officer was complicit in the death of George Floyd, but he did not kill him. The cause of death was a heart attack due to methamphetamine abuse and a very high level of fentanyl in George Floyd's system. Now, the officer, had he not been kneeling on his neck, not on his throat, but on his neck, George Floyd may well not have had the heart attack that day. But he did not kill him with intent. The officer who was kneeling on him was married to a migrant, a woman from, I believe it was Thailand. And the three officers supporting him were all not of European descent. And when you look at the facts surrounding this, it does not look like a case of four white racist cops picking on an innocent black man who was doing nothing wrong and beating him to death. If you actually look at the facts, which is what you've got to look at, this is not a case which in any way appears to be motivated by a will to kill the man or by racist motivation.
Yeah, I've never said it has, but leave that to one side. What you're saying is it's your belief that black people do not in any way face discrimination in this country in 2020? Or are you saying that you don't believe they face discrimination from law enforcement, police forces around the country? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that all people in the UK obviously face some form of discrimination. Yet, if you're going to talk about how the police in the UK discriminate against people based on race, the largest form of discrimination is against white people, and it is based around the cases of grooming and sexual assault of white girls, which have been going on for years, and the cover-up is still
taking place. But that's more complicated, because that is not, that's not police forces in the UK willfully not investigating this stuff. And I think you know this.
Yes, it is.
No, let me finish. I think you know this because we have heard, and I say we, I know you've heard from people. We've heard from officers. We've heard from bobbies. We've heard from chief superintendents. I've had Maggie Oliver on this programme several times. I've read her book. This was coming from the government. So it's not a case of the, you know, the policeman and woman on the street not being arsed about the grooming. They were arsed about it. Listen to people like John Wedger. They wanted to do something about it, but it was coming from on high. And that's a different thing, Mark.
Well, I disagree. There have been cases in this country. There was one in Rotherham where two fathers went to a house to rescue their daughters. And when the police arrived because of the disturbance, the police arrested the fathers. There have been cases where white girls have been held hostage. And when they've been screaming and tried to escape, police have turned up. They've spoken to the men holding them hostage, taken their word and walked away.
I don't disbelieve
any
those examples.
Doing that is
wrong.
Complicit.
Listen, I don't disbelieve those examples, but the fact is, Maggie Oliver has sworn that this came from the Home Office, and it comes from the Home Office, and it goes to the Chief Superintendent, if that's what they're called, the most senior police officer at any station, and it was that way that detectives, particularly detectives, were told to leave it alone. And that's a little bit different.
But they still left it alone. Those detectives work for the people. They work for the taxpayer. They're sworn in to protect and serve. And if they're not doing that, and they're willfully not doing that, knowing they're doing something wrong, they too are part of a criminal conspiracy, whether they've been told to or not.
And can I just say this, by the way? No, there isn't.
If you are a police officer and you turn your back on a girl who's being raped, you are complicit.
That's a very black and white way to look at it, and I understand.
No, it's not. It's
no, listen, but Mark, it isn't. There are shades of grey in life. People have children. They have children. They have teenagers. They have university fees.
Would you turn your back on a girl who is being raped?
Well, I'd like to say absolutely fucking no.
Exactly,
of course not. Right?
You've got a moral compass. These people
have a moral compass.
So they're complicit.
Yes, but I'm saying there are shades of grey. Listen.
There's not shades of grey when you're talking about this. We're not talking about letting somebody go who was doing 35 miles an hour in a 30
I understand.
Zone at 2 in the morning because you want to get home and go to bed.
But Mark, you're being a little bit naive. We're talking about chief superintendents telling detectives, leave that one alone, I want you to go here. Forget about what's going on in that little village in Rochdale, I want you to go over there, there's a job over there for you. That's what was going on. And it's black and white to condemn the bastards. I agree with you, it makes me sick. But you have to see the bigger picture. The same thing happened, by the way, with respect to people like that rotten, filthy animal. What's his face? Oh, say it for me. The peer in Leicester. Why can't I think of his name now? Greville Janner. The same thing, Mark. Detectives wanted to go after these guys. They wanted to go after Cyril Smith. They wanted to go after Ted Heath. They wanted to go after Heath even in the 70s. And they were told, forget about that, go over there. And for the sake of keeping their jobs, it might sound rotten, I agree with you, that's what they did. And what else can you say about that?
People can act in a horrific fashion and overlook the rape and mass sexual abuse of young girls because, well, we've got to put food on the table. You have just justified
people
more or less doing anything.
You're not listening to me. I'm saying, you're not listening to me. You're condemning the detectives and the ordinary police women and men for doing nothing about it. And I don't like that. What I'm saying to you is they didn't make the decision not to investigate. They were told not to. It doesn't make it right, but it is different. It's slightly different. It's not a case where they were going about their business, left to their own devices. Ah, let's forget about the raping of white girls by Pakistani men. That wasn't how it was. And the distinction is important. That's all I'm saying. Back to you.
I think there is a major problem here. And I think I've adequately stated my case.
Yeah.
That the largest case of systematic racist policing was a case where white people were the victims. And I've also made the case that in the case of George Floyd, when you look at all the evidence presented, this looks to be a case where a man did die because of his interactions with the police, but he certainly wasn't murdered, and he certainly wasn't an angel. And the officers, all four of the officers in the case, don't appear to have been motivated by any form of racial bias or hatred. And the one white officer who was there was married to somebody who wasn't of European descent and was a recent migrant.
Yeah, it doesn't change the fact that there's obviously a huge problem in the United States with the hyper-militarization of the police. There's a massive issue with it. Training methods, thousands of officers from hundreds of forces over the years have been sent to Israel. I know you know all about that. I believe, I don't have overwhelming evidence, but I believe anecdotally, they're basically taught to see the public as the enemy. Do you go along with that? I mean, that's what I see anyway. And it's not a white or a black thing. I think increasingly police officers are seeing us, the unwashed, as the enemy, not as their bosses, as it were. I don't know what you think of that.
Well, I can't stand the police. I think the police are a disgrace. And I think the police are a disgrace because if you lived in the kind of society I wanted to live in, a high trust, high IQ society where people, how Britain used to be, policing was very much done at a distance. And if you look at the way policing was carried out, it was like a guiding hand, a little bit of a watchful eye in case something went really wrong or there was a bad egg or things went awry. Now, look at policing. Policing is, as you say, it is hyper-militarized. And in many ways, it is more concerned now, especially in Britain, with policing thought, with policing speech, and with essentially oppressing people. And you were talking about Black Lives Matter. Well, I'll give you a perfect example of how policing is used politically and to stop freedom of expression. For weeks and weeks, for months, in fact, we've been seeing the media, the police and politicians talking to people in an absolutely demeaning way, calling them COVIDiots, calling them morons, belittling them and threatening them for going out for walks, to going to the beach, for going to the park for a picnic. And people were told this had to be done to protect people's lives. Yet in the last few weeks, we've seen these giant protests and Piers Morgan, he doesn't call the protesters COVIDiots. He doesn't say, get back in your house, you're going to cause wave two. He doesn't call them morons. He's ready to get down on his knee because this pandemic was exposed as a lie the minute the same people who wanted a lockdown supported these massive protests.
Strange, it's a strange reality when the Labour Party, rather than attack Johnson back in March for the lockdown itself and the damage it would do, chose to take Johnson on as somebody who was endangering the British public and criticise him for not enforcing lockdown quick enough. The so-called party of the worker is all for extending furlough schemes, which is going to bankrupt the country and is, of course, going to, as you said quite rightly, Mark, earlier on, is going to basically send thousands of businesses, middle-sized and smaller businesses, to the wall. There is no opposition to the government. The media is lost with all hands, isn't it? I mean, you've got Sunetra Gupta at Oxford University. You've got Carl Hennigan at Oxford University, as qualified as anybody else, more qualified than Chris Whitty, screaming from the rooftops that the lockdown is unnecessary and that it's going to do more damage to our health than anything else, and yet they can't get a look in on television and radio. These are strange times, my friend. And you were talking a lot on your Twitter feed in recent days about the avalanche of censorship.
Yeah, it's crazy. Everyone's being kicked off YouTube. You've lost The Iconoclast. You've lost David Duke. You've lost Stefan Molyneux. You've lost Richard Spencer. You've lost American Renaissance, Jared Taylor's organisation. There'll be many, many more smaller ones that have also gone. And anybody who is talking about either race, about Zionist influence, about Black Lives Matter, they're all going down the memory hole. And YouTube, a platform that was built off the little guy, producing news that other people wanted to hear about, well, it's gone. It's just a corporate playground now. And if you produce a video on something with an alternative view, your video is now being flagged, they're being pulled down, they're being restricted. This is insane. And we are seeing here the greatest sort of power grab we've seen in decades, maybe potentially post-Second World War. And the flow of information which the internet allowed is now being restricted. And this is absolutely disgusting. And all of the people who have been banned here have not actually advocated violence in any way.
No, they haven't broken any law. You're right. It's a scandal. They haven't broken any law. They haven't incited violence. Look, it happened to me 3 years ago. My very, very large YouTube channel was deleted because of an interview I did with somebody when I gave them a chasing, a proper chasing, and they just deleted it. And I couldn't do anything at the time. And I couldn't do anything now because I don't have any money. Now, I'm not having a go at the right, and I'm not having a go at nationalists. I like him. I like you. I like having you on the programme. I like robust debate. So why doesn't Molyneux, or one of these kind of recent victims of deletion, whom I know have funds available, why don't they try and litigate with Google? Somebody has got to do it, Mark. Somebody has got to say, listen, You can't do that. You can't delete my channel. And you'll know this, but of course many of our listeners won't know this. These fuckers don't even tell you why. They haven't the decency or the manners to say, well, somebody said this in your video or somebody said that. At which case, at least you could say, well, okay, I'll look into that or whatever. They don't say anything to you. So somebody needs to get this company into court. Why doesn't...
Of course they do. But this is the problem. And I've been a victim of this myself. Yeah. I've had videos with over a million views on them disappear off the platform.
Yeah.
And when I say why, they send me a generic email. Yeah. And when I say, please point me in the direction of the words and phrases that I use that specifically violated this so I can alter my content, they just send you the generic email again. And then you say to them, I think you've made a mistake here because you're just forwarding me a generic email. I need to know what I'm saying wrong, or I cannot keep producing content if you won't tell me where the boundaries lie, and they just send you the generic email again. There is no explanation. There are no clear rules. And they even say in their very woolly rules that even if you stay within the boundaries of what they call acceptable discourse, but you go close to the boundary, they'll remove you anyway for going too close to the boundary. So it's basically like being in the prison yard with a fence and them saying, well, if you climb over the fence, we're going to shoot you, and you keep walking near the fence but don't climb over it, and they shoot you anyway. And they just say, well, you know, you're a bit close to the fence. But I didn't climb over it, officer. Well, we don't like you going near the fence now as well, so we're going to shoot you. Well, where can I go? We can't tell you. Have a look at the terms and conditions, which don't tell you anything. That's exactly what they're doing. It's scandalous. And people are losing their livelihoods. People are losing their life's work. People feel very stressed because they're being censored. And everybody that I know that has been censored never once advocated for violence and didn't use any racial slurs either.
Yeah.
There were no racial slurs and no advocation of violence, terrorism, or anything of the sort. And as I said, some of these videos, I know that one by Dr. David Duke had been seen millions and millions of times. And it was by about Goldman Sachs and their influence within the media and the global political stage. There was nothing in that that advocated violence. Disappeared down the memory hole.
They do. One of my friends has suggested to me that when Google allows monetization of your videos, and we've all had monetization at some stage, they have entered into some sort of business arrangement with you. And surely legal minds should look into whether YouTube can just walk away from that business arrangement with you, dump you basically, and not give you the information that you just discussed. A final question for you. Thanks for coming back, man. I love the back and forth with you. I love a bit of robust debate. You don't get it too often, sadly, on the TV or radio these days. And you know I'm not patronising you. I appreciate you coming on. Final question. Words and terminology, very important to those that would change the way we live and change our paradigm. I'm getting a bit sick of this term frontline that's been introduced to our lexicon, Mark. Everybody is talking about, oh, the nurses on the front line, and increasingly police officers are talking on television about the front line. Now, that's a war a term. That's a phrase used to describe war, you know, the front line. It seems to me, again, to go back to something we talked about earlier, that increasingly we're to be seen, us, you and me, as dangerous, as disease spreaders, or as protesters, or as morally corrupt or whatever. That frontline term that's everywhere, a bit sinister, isn't it?
I think there's a lot of things that have been very sinister. And I think this idea of people going outside of their home, of clapping, it's ritualistic.
Yeah.
And I also think, and I did a video on this, I actually forget the name of it, but I'll try and sort of dig it out now. But it was about the way that we're walking in. It's called The Rise of the Snitch State. And it was about how we're walking into a communist style state where we're being encouraged to inform on our neighbours, on our friends, on our family members. People are peeping out from behind their curtains. Ooh, have the Joneses gone out for two exercise sessions today? Ooh, did the Smiths go to Tesco's for something that wasn't absolutely essential? And hundreds of thousands of people over this lockdown have informed on their neighbours. Now, it's very interesting because over a period of time, people have expected surveillance to come in via mobile phone tapping, CCTV. But this kind of surveillance, where we're being told to snitch on our own friends and neighbours, that's like something out of the Soviet bloc. And all of this ritual, all of this bend the knee, clap for the NHS, people are now actually ringing the police and informing on each other on social networks for not loving the NHS enough, for not clapping loudly enough.
Yeah.
It's very, very scary. And it could well be used to turn people like yourself and people like me, not just into social pariahs, but into people who very well may be the victims of violence at the hands of a state-supporting mob.
Great to chat with you again, Mark. Mark's Twitter handle is at Mark A. Collett. That's C-O-L-L-E-T-T. It's Mark A. Collett. Follow him on Twitter. Hundreds of thousands of people following him there. Find him on YouTube, on BitChute as well. There are links on Mark's Twitter page to that. And The Fall of Western Man. I read Mark's book. It's a very interesting read. Go to thefallofwesternman.com. Thanks, mate. Before you go, I'm as disgusted by grooming gangs, you know, Pakistani grooming gangs, as you are. I don't want you to go away today thinking that I'm giving anybody any pass or any excuse. But I think when it comes to the investigation of it, I think it's just a bit more of a grey area in terms of why it didn't happen. Maggie Oliver's book, Mark, if you haven't read it, I think you'd enjoy it. And I think she's somebody you'd enjoy speaking with on that issue. But anyway, look, great to have you back on the programme.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. And, you know, whenever you need me on, give me a shout. It was too long between our last shows.
There was no bloody reason for that.
Yeah. Often.
But I've had quite a lot of what you would call nationalist commentators on the programme, because obviously I'm not a British nationalist. It's important to have people on the programme who see the world a bit differently than I do. Otherwise, it bores the bejesus out of my listeners. Love having you on, mate. Come back real soon and enjoy the weekend.
Have a great day and stay safe.
Cheers, Mark. You too, buddy. That was Mark Collett live on the line from Yorkshire. And it's Mark A. Collett on Twitter, 6.5 minutes past the hour. And I'm hoping that say it again, Richie. I was going to say Pokey Parser. Why would I have said that? Posey Parker will join me in a few minutes' time. It's time for a tune, I think. Hey, listen, I was contacted by Kelly in Cork. Do you agree, Kelly? Do you agree? In Cork. If I do the Cork accent again, she might unfollow me on Twitter again, so I won't do the Cork accent. I'm not saying I've got a great accent, but the Cork accent is a very sing-song accent. We love it. Okay. And Kelly put me in touch with Jamie. Jamie's in Limerick, and he's a singer and a songwriter, and he's got a band called Gombeen. Now, I recommend, just for exercising your fingers, your digits, go online and look up Gombeen. G-O-M-B-E-E-N. G-O-M-B-E-E-N. That's right. And he's got a song called Era. Okay? Era. E-fada, I-R-E. And it's a song about the state of Ireland now as he sees it. It's a rock song, I think. Kind of rock traditional. It's a bit like The Horse Lips, I suppose, maybe. Maybe. And it's good. And there's a YouTube video that accompanies it. And the lyrics are on the YouTube video. And it's a song about, well, Ireland and what's happened to Ireland culturally. So I'm going to play it. I've not done that for a long, long, long time, taking a tune from a listener. But I'm playing it anyway. This is for Kelly in Cork. This is Gombeen, and the song is Era.
My era's in chains. Look around.
like that. I like it a lot. That is Era from Gone Bean. Thanks, Jamie, for sending the track to the programme. And thanks to Kelly in Cork for connecting us. I really appreciate that, Kelly. Just trying to connect with Posey now. She's there. She's present and correct and all the rest of it. Do tweet me between now and the end of the programme. Excuse me. I need to have some water. Is that Richie Allen Show on Twitter? Is that Richie Allen Show on Twitter? I'm just going to tell Posey to give me a call there because I'm ringing her and it's not working, strangely enough. I don't know what's going on there. Technology can be temperamental. Yes, software can be temperamental, not just people. Imagine what it'll be like when artificial intelligence programs are running everything and artificial intelligence becomes temperamental. Imagine it. Right, let's say I'm going to try her again. There's a gremlin or two in the works. There is a gremlin or two in the works. It's warming up in Salford, by the way. The clouds have disappeared. Looking out the studio window, it's very sunny. Blue skies looking lovely. Looking nice outside. And we're having a temporary problem. Well, no, we're not. I think Posey might be there now. Good stuff. Right, listen, before we say hello to her, welcome her back to the programme, let me remind you that she is one of this country's most prominent gender-critical feminists. She was dubbed so by the press here. She argues for the rights of women and girls to be protected in female-only spaces for men who identify as women. Now, she has faced a barrage of harassment and censorship because of this. We have talked about this in the past. Interviewed under caution by the police for her opinions, her Facebook page was deleted. And of late, she's had to deal with the awful reality of people posting her address and other details online. That's not nice at all, to say the least. Let's welcome her back to the programme. Posey Parker. Posey, welcome back. Great to have you on. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. And before we talk about your brilliant video on the Daniel Radcliffe, J.K. Rowling thing... brilliant. It is great stuff, Posey. I'm somebody who likes a laugh while being educated, while learning something, and it is very good. We'll talk about that. The harassment is not funny, though. I spoke to Caroline Farrow on this programme 2 weeks ago, and that's... I don't want to be sensational. That's kind of horror film stuff, that. People putting your address online and inviting others to come around. What's the latest with that? What are the police telling you and how are you dealing with it?
Well, the police told me when somebody set up a website with pictures of my kids that basically that I do say things online that people find disagreeable. So it was a bit of a shrug and a bit of a, well, what do you expect?
So tough shit, Patty. You say things that people don't like, so you should expect people to put pictures of your children online.
Absolutely. Of course you should. Especially if you're a woman.
Especially if you're... And lately people have put your address online. I know this to be true, right?
Yeah, well, they did that back then. They even sort of put aerial photographs of my house so that just in case you couldn't find the address, you could have a nice map to show you exactly how to get to my house.
Do you have any idea who they are? Who are these people?
I've no idea who they are. I mean, to be honest, Richie, more sinister than that with photographs of my kids and where they go to school.
Yeah.
You know, I did for some time, I worried about a particular individual who's quite slippery, but they don't come. And my husband now works from home, so he's a big guy. So they won't come for me. But the latest thing is that I get numerous WhatsApp messages from somebody who describes in great detail my youngest child dying of cancer, although he's topical, so it's now coronavirus.
Jesus.
Mm.
I don't know how you cope with it. I had a taste of it last year myself on a totally unrelated thing. It wasn't to do with gender criticism or gender identity. Do you want to remind our listeners where this began for you? I'm sorry for not mentioning in the introduction, I should have mentioned in the introduction, the posting of your children's photographs online. It doesn't get any more sinister than that. No, it's serious. And maybe, you know, maybe for me, because I don't have children, it's easy for me not to mention that. But this How long do you think has this been a thing where we're talking about, you know, men who identify as women looking to access female-only spaces? For listeners who are brand new to this subject, it's a good bloody question, actually. When did it begin, do you think?
Well, I remember I went to Leeds University in the early to mid-90s, and I do remember a person who described themselves as a transvestite. And this was a club full of like 18 to 25-year-olds. And this was a man in his 40s who was quite inappropriate in the women's toilets. But it wasn't considered his right to be there. It was just sort of, there's a bit of a dodgy bloke in the ladies, right? And people just thought, oh, well, you know, he's being a bit weird, but we're all going in packs, so it doesn't really matter. And everyone sort of forgave that sort of oddity. But I think the difference is now is that these wants and desires to enter women's spaces is no longer an oddity. It's being demanded as a right. So I think that's probably, it's only 4 years, isn't it? I mean, I noticed a shift. Well, I became aware of what was going on in 2015. And so I think at that point, nobody was saying that they demanded access to all women's spaces, demanded our language, demanded to be called women, not trans women, or not transvestites or transsexuals. It was a grab for language. And with that, clearly, is a grab for spaces. That's the point of the language, to enable less dissent on access to spaces.
Speaking of language, of course, our listeners will know because they follow you and what you're doing, your campaigns. You started a petition, didn't you, to get the Oxford to get the Oxford English. I mean, this actually sounds to me, it sounds so crazy. You got a petition going to get the Oxford Dictionary, obviously a world famous tome, of course, to keep the definition of woman as adult female human. And I know you've got T-shirts, and mm-hmm. I know some of our listeners will want to know where they can get those T-shirts. And this offended people. And am I right in understanding that change.org got rid of the petition? Yeah. Why?
Yeah, within about a day. Well, they don't tell me. It's because it's hateful. So it's sort of, it goes against our guidelines, which is against hate speech.
You hateful bastard, Posy. How dare you want to change the dictionary to say that woman means adult female human? I how can you live with yourself? I don't know.
I self-flagellate on a daily basis.
It's crazy stuff. And they took it down. And of course, this segues into J.K. Rowling. I can only imagine. I mean, look, my other half is a woman. Thank God. And she also gets irate, I think. I mean, she's pretty mild-mannered. I mean, I think you're pretty mild-mannered. When you hear things like people who menstruate. You see, it's easy for a bloke like me who thinks he's funny, and I try to make people laugh. It's easy for me to send that up. But it's not funny, really, is it? Why aren't they introducing terminology like people who menstruate?
Well, because the fundamental assault on all of this is on women. So they don't. So, for example, we'll take something that's really basic: testicular cancer or cervical cancer. So in Canada, for example, with cervical cancer, this sounds like a lie. It's not a lie. There is a page, or there was a page until it got ridiculed, specifically for men who've transitioned. There's a page of the cervical cancer guidance in Canada devoted to men who have cervixes, which, of course, none do. Now, that's not talking about trans men or women that call themselves trans. That is people born male, i.e. will never, ever, ever have a cervix. There's a page for them. And all the way through the literature on cervical cancer, they will talk about people with a cervix or cervix havers. And then they also include specifically men who don't have a cervix. For prostate testicular cancer, they talk about men. They don't talk about people with testicles or people with prostates or prostates havers or whatever it is. So male language and language surrounding men's health and so on is not at all being altered for this particular sort of cult. But female language is very much up for grabs.
Wow. That's astonishing. People born male and literature dedicated to them having cervix issues. This is astonishing to me. I didn't know that. How, in terms of, we'll never know in terms of numbers, right? But what I want to know is, because I've had transsexual women on the programme, they would be in agreement with you. You know, mm-hmm. I've had a wonderful woman on a show called Diane. Diane was born male, had the surgery, would identify, I suppose, as having gender dysphoria, and gave an amazing conversation on this programme about the whole process and why it was important and all of that. But would agree with you, would be in total agreement with you. So what I want to find out, and it's very difficult to find out, is what sort of numbers of people are pushing this? Because it seems that, you know, quite a lot of, at least transgender people I meet, they don't want any part of it. But yet, even if it is small, they're having enormous success, because other authors who are clients of J.K. Rowling's publishers are saying, we're leaving, we're not sticking around in the same publishing house as J.K. Rowling. Mm. I mean, this is mad stuff. So how prominent do you think these people are? How many of them? Are they big in number?
No, I think they're few in number, but great in volume. I think that's the factor. And it's all about the laziness. I'll step back a bit. I think a fundamental issue in our society right now, as Donald Trump coined it, is fake news.
Yeah.
So we don't invest enough. We don't want to pay for anything anymore because we can get everything free online. And that means high quality investigative journalism is sort of gone. Very difficult. It's pretty much gone. You can still find it in some of the broadsheets, but basically we're sort of very fast, transactional, clickbait type kind of society. So what that does is that means you need to fill this content of these old newspapers that are now online. You need to fill them, but you're not really going to pay anything beyond a skeletal sort of student staff to do it. Then what those student staff do, because they're not getting paid very much, is they go to Twitter for news.
Yeah.
And Twitter, I think they said something like 15% of the people on Twitter make 50% of the content. Now, that may be, I may have exaggerated, they may not be quite accurate, but I think that the point is not that many people are on Twitter in the first place to be representative of our society. And then even on Twitter, not many of the people that you read frequently and constantly posting, not many of those people, those people aren't very large in number. And so it's a concoction of a bit of laziness and a bit of tantrum, and put those two things together. And all of a sudden, these people who spend all day online making a fuss about anything, because it's easy to, it's not writing a letter, it's not any, it doesn't take any thought, just spew an opinion, who've got all the time in the world just to at John Lewis or at Marks and Spencers. And then before you know it, everyone's very frightened. They're going to get a massive Twitter pile on. They sort of see Twitter a bit more like real life and representative of society, which it isn't. And then we end up with people getting cancelled. I mean, those authors that left J.K. Rowling's publisher, I don't expect they've got anything even above a couple of thousand sales.
You're a genius, by the way. What you've described there, it's the male online to a T. Anybody who wants to pull out their phone now, I hate to be recommending people pull out their phone, but that's what most people are doing, go to Mail Online. And Posy has just hit the nail on the head. She's the first person to, I think, to see this. This is how news is happening now. They're going to Twitter and they're going to Facebook, primarily Twitter, and pulling what you call Twitter storms and writing them into stories. And it's dreadful. And it's leading to, as you described, companies being put under enormous pressure. The tabloids helping that, feeding it into, you know, withdrawing their support for something or whatever, because it might be deemed to be hateful. And you can see then, as you've described, how a very, 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 very small amount of people, as these activists are, can effect quite a big change. And I fear for people now in employment. You know what I say to my listeners, Posy? I say to them, you know, if you're somebody whom is working maybe in jobs where maybe you change fairly frequently, if you're in an industry where you might have a job for 2 years, and then you might, you know for a fact that maybe in 2021 you'll be moving somewhere else, I tell them, delete your Twitter. And you know what they tell me back? I say, delete your Twitter because somebody's going to go through it and find you arguing with a trans activist or something, and it's going to hurt you. And you know what they say back to me? They say, it's worse now if you don't have a Twitter account because the employer will want to know, why are you not on social media? These are mad times.
Gosh. Imagine I think for your mental health, don't be on Twitter. That would be my advice. It doesn't matter about your job. Just for your own sanity and your own perspective on the world, just don't be on Twitter. And go to Parler.
Go to Parler where everybody's going. And your children are, you know, they're at the age where they want to be on devices and using devices. How do you, knowing what you know, how do you police that, you know?
Well, for a start, they have to be connected to me on all their accounts. And we also have a 5-second rule, which is I say, I want your phones. And they've got five seconds to bring it unlocked.
Right. And if they don't?
They lose it for a week.
They lose it for a week. So they don't have time to delete whatever they're doing. They've got to give it to
you. They're not allowed to. No. And if anything looks like they've deleted recent history or anything, they also get their phones taken.
You're a hard
because,
woman.
Well, look, this is a new thing, isn't it? This sort of access to the outside world, access to people that I don't know, access to people that I've never got a hope ever to meet. I mean, they're not allowed to, like my youngest is 11, so he's only allowed ever online with an open door so that I know exactly who he's talking to. And in fact, about 2 months ago, I heard an American accent. And I was like, oh, we don't have any American friends that he knows. And so he lost for the first, like right in the middle of lockdown, he had a month without access to anything.
Is that right?
I'm a bit hard.
You are a bit hard. So when you say something, you mean it. Yeah, I've heard that approach to parenting is the way to go if we ever become parents. If you do administer a punishment, you've got to stick to it. Otherwise, the kid knows that they've got you over a barrel forever. A lot of my listeners, Posey's going to stay with us for another 10 or so minutes, hopefully. We'll say 15 max. I know you have things to do. I appreciate your company this afternoon. If you haven't come across Posey before, her website's been redeveloped. It will be theposeyparker.com. We're talking to a very well-known gender-critical feminist who's been arguing for the rights of women and girls to be protected in female-only spaces for men who identify as women. She's had to put up with a lot of flack for that. Recently, she's involved with the Free Speech Union. That's no bad thing either. And she had a change.org petition deleted because she had the cheek to suggest that the Oxford Dictionary keep the definition of woman as adult female human. That's obviously hate speech, so I don't have much sympathy for you there, Posey. some of our listeners have been asking me to put something to you. I was sent a leaflet from a listener a couple of weeks back, and I thought it was a wind-up. And it was a leaflet that is going to, discussing how sex education will be taught this autumn if the children are ever back in school, of course. And it involves talking to 13-year-old children and using a dice, and on each side of the dice, and I think a dice has six sides, there are parts of the human body, and the children will throw the dice and they will discuss possible sexual acts with the dice. Now, a lot of my listeners are very concerned about the new sexual education curriculum. They think it's absolutely insane, and they believe that more parents should be talking about it and should be worried about it than actually are. Do you know much about this, and what do you think of it?
I haven't heard the specific of the dice. Wow.
Yeah, and it's true. It is true. It's not a wind-up.
If it wasn't so sinister, it would be funny, right? But it's really sinister. Parents need to know they have the ultimate power when it comes to schools. I know the government have stepped in and said you can't take your kids out, which I find a quite a perplexing thing for a government to change to think, because for a start, loads of the things that sex education is supposed to govern, loads of the dangers I see as happening to young people, they don't really talk about. They might talk about pornography, but there isn't even any advice to say, maybe just don't watch it. You know, maybe just give yourself a little bit of a, let your brain fully develop before you start introducing things that will change your pathways and your pleasure pathways and what you expect from an intimate relationship, it will be changed forever, and it may actually ruin your potential for having a fulfilling sex life. And that's because this generation can access the sort of pornography that I don't even know existed when I was their age. So that's one thing. The second thing about sort of the blurring of the boundary between the embarrassment factor of children and adults, I think, is really dangerous. It's a very swift road or a very swift path into not having a distinction between adults and children and sex. And I think that's a very real concern. It sounds sort of hyperbole, but I really do think it's a real concern. But as parents, you go in with a nice big smile, but a very firm mind, and you ask the head teacher of the school to go through with you the whole curriculum. And maybe you get a number of parents. Maybe you try and organize a group to go and get the head teacher of the school to give you a full presentation and let you do the lessons. Because I promise you, the embarrassment factor that will arise when a fully grown adult is getting other adults in a room, bearing in mind he's going to teach your kids, and he knows he's going to teach your kids, or she knows she's got to teach your kids, and do the dice game with them. But you have to be asking the questions. You can't just be cross and just write it online. You have to go into school. You have to look that teacher in the eye. Don't be too confrontational, but you really have to ask them to explain exactly what the aims and objectives are and how they fit against what is the legal requirement for the sex and relationship education.
That's brilliant, that. I think I'm 45 now. I think back to, I was 15, I think, in secondary school. And it was taught in a very sterile way. We had a terrible, awful, boring teacher, some bloke, I can't remember his name. And we were learning words like gametes and ovaries. It was monotonously boring. We laughed for a few minutes like children do. And that was that. Basically, the facts. Here is how two adult human beings procreate. But now they're introducing to children, you know, the fact that they might be, they want them to consider their own gender. And the BBC says, the BBC's own educational tools say that you might be over 100 different genders. But they're also asking them to talk about other forms of sex rather than procreation. And I don't believe they should have any business doing that. None. And I'm not some sort of prudish Mary Whitehouse type character. They shouldn't do that. They should leave them alone.
It's none of their business. Can you imagine anything worse than at 15 sat in a classroom with a teacher telling you exactly how you can reach the height of pleasure in sex? I mean, it's not like 45-year-olds, 60-year-olds, 80-year-olds, 26-year-olds aren't actually having sex. It's not like before they decided to do this in schools, people were like, well, I don't know what sex is. I can't possibly have children because I have no idea how to make one.
That's absolutely right. Somebody is tweeting me about the legendary Monty Python Meaning of Life sketch where Cleese is given sex education in the classroom and brings his wife in. That's getting a bit too smutty. Just before we just before we let you go, Posey, let's talk about free speech in general as an issue. You're a member of the Free Speech Union. I've heard Toby Young being interviewed on talk radio and on LBC, I think, about these issues. I like what he has to say. My politics will be different, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter a bloody damn. Is this the most perilous time in your adult life, do you think, for the right of people to think what they want to think or to say what they want to say without repercussions like being cancelled or losing your job? How dangerous is this time, do you think?
Yeah, I think it is pretty bad. I think this is the first time in my lifetime that I've seen rights in this country being rolled back. And I think that's why it's significant. You know, there's countries in the world that would be absolutely elated to have as much speech as we are allowed to say. But if you look at us like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I think you could say more. I think you could discuss more. And what the people who like to cancel free speech, the people that like to use words like hate speech and terms like hate speech, and that something can be hateful, like a picture or a drawing or whatever is hateful, those people forget that it's individuals right at the bottom of society. It's the ultimately powerless that really need more than the rest of us the fundamental right to free speech. That's what we're, I mean, can I just wonder if people are looking across at Hong Kong and thinking, you know, well, I wish we could be like that. I'd like police to come and maybe arrest us, take us to mainland China, and potentially we'd never get seen again, just for sort of expression and freedom and being able to hold views. And to think that this is going to lead to anything other than an absolute mess, where even the people that advocate for curtailing speech won't be also victims of their own sort of principles, is just woefully naive. I'm not saying I wouldn't find it hilarious when it happens. It's just, I just think they should be warned that they will be next.
Yeah, it's sickening to me to see when somebody like Katie Hopkins gets booted off of social media. Now, my politics are well known to my listeners. I'm an old champagne lefty, champagne socialist, and I wouldn't find much in agreement. I wouldn't have much to agree with in terms of Katie or some of her pals. But I interview some of her pals, and I like listening to people I don't agree with. But to see people laughing and celebrating that they've been booted off, not given, you've just very eloquently explained, not given a single thought to the fact that it might be you soon. You might fall foul of, you know, whatever the accepted position is on some issue, and you might express something different and you're gone. On that, let me ask you a final question, and thanks for your time again today. I should have asked you this a few minutes ago. If this attack on women's rights, real women, and the right of women to have spaces reserved for women, if it doesn't slow down, what's it going to mean for women?
Well, I think for some young women already involved in this, we can see that they have been so brainwashed and gaslit that they don't even understand what it is to have their own space. And it's something I've discussed before. There's a global phenomenon in adolescence. And anyone who's had kids will know this, that there's development ages of children where they choose to sort of not be naked around their parents anymore, don't want to see their parents naked either.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you get to sort of adolescence and everything's excruciatingly embarrassing. But you also want all your friends to like you. That's the reason that you're more likely in a group. If you're a teenage boy and you're in a group of boys, you're more likely to get run over than if you're on your own, because you want to impress your mates more than you fear the car that's going to smack and kill you.
Yeah.
So these sort of phenomenon, then what we're doing to teenage girls is we're saying, we know you want to impress your friends, we know you're really embarrassed, so we're going to really mess up your brain and force you to step into the most embarrassing situations, which would be being derogated in front of a boy and not having your privacy. So I just think that it will be everywhere, and women will just be expected to put up with it. And that will be your elderly mother in a care home. That will be anybody trying to recuperate in hospital. That will be, you know, all those places you will cease to have any space that is just for women. So, I mean, that's it really. And also they're going to take our language. So you won't even be able to talk about it, because when you talk about female only space, nobody will know what on earth you're talking about, because the word female will mean anybody who says that they're a woman.
And what does Oxford Dictionary say now next to the word woman? I was trying to find it there a minute ago, but I was listening intently to what you were saying. Is it?
I think they're still on woman, adult, human, female.
But the danger is that it's going to change.
Oh, absolutely, the danger is, of course. And like in Scotland, for example, I think they've changed recently. So a woman is anyone who identifies as a woman, but a man is an adult human male.
Absolute bloody final question, the ABF. what to, I suppose there's a certain sense of irony asking a feminist, do men need to do more? What can men do, particularly men in the media? Or do we leave it to you to deal with it? And I'm not being in any way, you know, cheeky in saying that. Or do blokes in the media need to say a little bit more about it or facilitate the discussion of it? How do we deal with it?
Well, I think there's a number of issues. Number one, I'm not a feminist anymore. But number one, this is men's fight too. This isn't men being allies to women, because this is our society. We both men and women are invested in a society that is truthful and is honest and doesn't have legal fictions like pretending that men can be women in law. And so it would be ludicrous for me to say that this doesn't impact men and that men don't have a vested interest. Men also are fathers of children, and I'm pretty sure they would like a society in which everybody can speak up when they see something that they don't feel is fair and just. So that's one thing. Number two, we still are in a place, and I really do hate to say this, where men's voices are listened to much more than women's. And I don't include myself in this, because I listen to whoever's saying the right thing. But it would be prudent for fathers to go into schools, not just mothers. Don't leave it to women to go and take care of whatever's happening with your kids at school. You go in. It would be prudent that when men speak, that they speak for themselves. I don't need a man to speak for me,
yeah,
but I would like a man to speak. And I think, unfortunately, what's happened often in the movement that I'm in, although I'm not really part of it, I'm just like a fellow traveller, is that people are so fearful of this whole thing that they would rather have somebody born male, who now calls himself a woman or a trans woman, to speak on behalf of this debate and what it means to them, more than the women, I think, who are far more likely to be impacted. So I don't want people speaking for women, unless you are a woman, but I do think you should damn well be speaking for yourself, because this is our society.
Brilliant, Posy. Good luck with the website. I hope your website is up and running soon, because you're always really good to read. I know the I know the videos as well. Hey, do you want to plug the T-shirts? Go on before we go.
Well, okay. So my the Posy Parker website is actually not coming back. So I have standingforwomen.com, where you can buy the T-shirts, and the adult human female T-shirts are just £15, including postage. And then I also have a podcast called Woman by Definition. So I have a womanbydefinition.com website. And then I've got a podcast on iTunes, and also my YouTube channel, which is now under my real name, which is Kelly J. Keane.
Brilliant. So standingforwomen.com. And what was the other one?
Woman by Definition.
Woman by Definition. And the T-shirts are available there. So folks, check it out. This is a very serious issue, and it's going to grow and grow and grow. I look forward to the next time you're on, Posy. Thanks so much for giving us your time this afternoon. And
no, thanks for having me.
Anytime. You know you're welcome. Don't wait to be invited back, okay? Cheers.
All right.
Speak soon. Bye for now. The brilliant Posy Parker, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's exactly, 15 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Let's have a tune. Let's have a tune, because I need to take a glass of water. Back after this. Yeah, Carly Rae Jepsen and Call Me Maybe on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Thursday's programme. It's been a quick and a busy old week. Back with you in 60 seconds. We'll have a chat, a little bit of a chat about social media.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back to the program. We've not heard from the Ginger Ninja. Somebody said to me today, Richie, you've not had any clips from Kay Burley at breakfast. Not any. She's not been on. As far as I understand, she's been on holiday, has the old Ginger Ninja. Hey, let me read you this from Toby Young in The Spectator. Toby Young, permanently red-faced, permanently angry. Those right-wingers, they're always angry. They've always got red faces. Hence Gammon. Yes. But Young is an interesting guy. He's got an ability to write. He can articulate an argument. And I like that. I used to get annoyed watching him on Question Time years ago. Because he's a decades long, not decades, but 10, 12, 15 years anyway, he's been a guest on Question Time. And he would always boil my piss, you know? Young. But even then, I'm happy for somebody to have their opinion. But he's been writing in The Spectator, listen to this. And I did double check this information myself, and he is right. He writes in this week's Spectator, according to The Telegraph, the police in England and Wales have investigated and recorded 120,000 non-crime hate incidents in the past 5 years. More than 65 a day. Right. So non-crime meaning there is no crime on the statute books. There is no danger that the person being investigated can be brought to court. It is a, first and foremost, a ridiculous waste of time and police resources. But yet, people like a guy called Mike McCulloch was investigated for liking a tweet on Twitter. A tweet that Young writes descends from fashionable left-wing dogma. And once that's on your record, namely that the police have popped round to ask you why did you like that tweet, once that's on your record, it shows up on an enhanced DBS check. Of course, the DBS check is when somebody who might employ you does a criminal background check on you. And this sort of shit will show up. Right? So you might have gotten your coaching badge. And it might have cost you 500. Well, it cost you more. If you're a man or a woman or a woman who wants to be a football coach and you spent a few £1,000 getting the qualifications, and you're ready to go. You're ready to go with your tracksuit on you and your football boots and your whistle. And you apply to a local school to be a PE teacher or to be a coach. And you might have liked J.K. Rowling's tweet saying that people who menstruate are women. And a policeman might have asked you about that. Yeah, what about the hate speech there? Sorry, Kelly. And that'll be recorded by the police department as having paid you a visit, even though they have no chance of bringing you to court or anything. So next time you go for a job then as the teacher or the football coach or whatever, it could show up. And they might determine that, well, we might have trans children or the children of trans people. So you won't get the job. Wow. This is the world we're living in. So I reiterate to you, BBG listeners, if you're somebody whose job changes from time to time, you might be a casual worker. You might be on zero hours contracts, and God love you if you are. Delete the bejesus out of your Twitter. At least go back and every now and then say delete everything up until the last, say, 4 weeks or something. If you can. It might be tedious. I believe companies these days are offering those services on your behalf. There are companies who will sanitize your Twitter history for you. So we grin and we jest when we talk about this stuff. but it has serious consequences. I know that if I, for some reason, couldn't do this radio show anymore, maybe listeners to this particular radio programme get fed up of supporting it, which might happen. It's feasible. I know I haven't got a snowball's chance in hell of ever getting a job in radio again, even though I'm a very competent, highly professional, sometimes, presenter now, and I am the greatest radio producer the world has ever seen. Producer now, not presenter. I'm not being arrogant. I'm telling you the truth. I'm the greatest producer of all time. Of all times. But I've got no fucking chance of ever getting a job again because of some of the things I've said, harmless though they are. Because it's not harmful to say that you despise the apartheid state of Israel. It's not harmful to say that a man is not a woman, though. So I would say to you, be very careful. This is the world we now inhabit. And it's not nice. So I've got to repeat that. I'm not filling time here. I'm saying it because it's important. You know? It's very important. And you've got to... Posey has children. One of them is 11. We haven't yet been blessed with children, with the chaos that would inevitably ensue if we were to have them. But these are the things you've got to be saying to your kids who might have their own little accounts that you might be monitoring. Basically, don't say anything about anything ever. Use Twitter to talk about your favourite pop star and your favourite sports team, but don't get involved in any discussion about anything because it might have serious consequences for you further down the line, and that's just crazy. But that's the world we live in now. And that's it. That's where it is. Right, so I've got some guests booked in for next week, which is good. It gives me a slightly easier next day or so. In a short while, I'm going to send some contact details to Mark Bajerski. And thanks again to everybody, who bought a raffle ticket to support this programme, to be in with the chance of winning those lovely Buddhas, that collection that Mark put up for the Richie Allen radio show, which brought in nearly 500 much-needed pounds for the programme. Thank you, Mark. I mentioned the other day, I don't solicit support because I don't like doing it. But because of the way things have been and because people are in trouble now, obviously support has slightly, a little bit more than slightly, dropped off a bit. And I understand that. Just to answer a question which came in again today, and it's a genuine question, I will never, ever, ever, ever put the programme behind a paywall. Never. In a million years. Never going to happen. I understand why people suggest it, and sometimes it sounds a bit tempting, yeah, but never. The vast majority of my listeners don't have a pot to piss in. I know this. I've been there. It's horrendous. I've really been there. I was there as a kid. I was there when I lived in Spain the last few years when things were difficult. I've been there. I will never, ever put this programme behind a paywall. Ever. And I'm not looking for any praise for that. I'm not virtue signalling. I'm not congratulations fishing. I just won't do it. If the support ever dropped off so badly, I would just stop doing the programme and that would be the end of it. But thanks to Mark Bajerski. Check out markbajerski.com. A lot of interesting guests next week. Many of them you've not heard from before. Between now and then, have a good couple of days. Sunday View will be live on Sunday at 11 o'clock. The usual nonsense, looking at the papers, listening to the Andrew Marr show, the Sky News show, Sophie Ridge, and Sunday View at 11. So, thank you to Mark Collett, thefallofwesternman.com. Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate that. And thanks to Posey Parker for coming on the programme in the second hour as well. And Godspeed, good luck to her and everybody else taking on this lunacy, this crazy, tiny minority of activists who are trying to change our language, who are trying to impose their will on people and ultimately threaten the safety of women and women-only spaces. Good luck to her in that ongoing battle. Going out of the programme with David Bowie. This is Changes. Have a fantastic weekend. Thanks for listening. Look after yourselves and one another. Bye for me. Bye now. Yeah.